Pushkin.
Hey, Dana, it's Chuck. Chuck Becerra, Malibu Lost Hill Sheriff Station. Hey, just calling you. Touching base. I'm back at work. I sent you a text. I got crunched a little bit.
That's Salvador Becerra. Goes by Chuck. He's the new captain of Lost Hill Station. The station has been in turmoil since Rauta was arrested. Scandal after scandal. Remember when Kobe Bryant's helicopter crashed in the Calabasas Hills?
L.A. County Sheriff's deputies are facing discipline now for taking and sharing graphic photos at the scene of the helicopter crash that killed 9 people, including Kobe Bryant. 8 deputies have been identified.
According to media reports, some of those deputies taking and sharing photos were from Lost Hills. I've been trying to get in with the leadership at the station ever since I heard about the murder in the park. Sometimes I just go to the station and stare at the mirrored glass behind the unattended reception desk. On the other side lie the answers to everything that doesn't make sense about this case. But all I can see is myself reflected back at me. It's the perfect metaphor for the sheriff's department. They see out, but you can't see in. But the weird thing about Captain Becerra, he's friendly. This guy calls me.
I think you've been keeping up with the politics here. Remember, I was the acting captain here, and then got replaced, and then got sent back.
He's nice. He wants to help. You're getting stonewalled, he tells me cheerfully. But when you're getting stonewalled, you know you're onto a good story. Something obviously went wrong at Lost Hill Station. There was apparently a shooter on the loose in Malibu for over a year and a half, and it was kept secret. Not only that, the alleged shooter hated the Lost Hills cops, had frequent contact with law enforcement, and lived in the hills behind the station. And Sergeant Wright, who gave me the helicopter tour, he and Lieutenant Royal, the two Lost Hills deputies who argued there was a serial sniper, a would-be serial killer in Malibu, and then found him, they're under investigation. What went wrong? Sarah's newly in charge. He wasn't there for all the mess, but he says he really, really wants me to find out the truth. He wishes he could tell me, but he can't. He'd get fired at a minimum, possibly charged. The truth, he keeps promising me, is a bombshell.
It's crazy. Crazy. It's gonna be. It'll make a good movie or a good book or at least a good chapter in it. Anyways, call me when you get a chance. I'll be in the rest of the week. Okay? Bye-bye.
I think I might be in? I'm Dana Goodyear, and this is Lost Hills. Episode 6, One More Day in Paradise. In 2016 and 2017, there was a series of near-miss shootings in and around Malibu Creek State Park. Then nothing for 11 months. In the summer of 2018, there was a 6th attack, another near-miss. It involved a white Tesla being driven by a man named Ian Kincaid. The date was June 18th. 4 days before Tristan Baudette was killed. Today, I'm at Ian's house, at the top of a twisty road in the Malibu Hills, standing in front of his garage. He pulls the car out. The white hood has a single piece of white electrical tape right between the headlights. He peels it away, revealing a deep gash.
Wow. Yeah. And you understand why I don't want my kids to see it.
So I was going about 60 miles an hour, 65, something like that, when I pulled over. But beforehand, I'd been going considerably faster.
Ian works as a gaffer in Hollywood, which means it's his job to light the sets. He's worked on 6 Quentin Tarantino movies. And on the day we're talking about, he was headed to the set of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He wanted to get there by 6 a.m.
Let me pop the hood.
So he got up in the dark and left his home. He took Malibu Canyon Road.
I was driving through the canyon about 4:20, and I was driving pretty fast. Sometimes in the morning, I'd drive excessive speed, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to get there too early. I don't need to speed. So I slowed down, and within a minute was when the bullet hit my car. And I remember thinking, what's that sound? You know, it was like, and I thought, did I leave a coffee cup on my roof again? And was that what that was rattling? Or and I thought, nah, I looked down and my teacup was right there. And I thought, well, maybe it was an acorn because I was driving near some oak trees. And just, you know, these are just thoughts at 4 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't trying to solve any mysteries. And then within, I'd say 10 seconds, maybe the alarm started going off. So I pulled over and got out of the car, and it was pitch dark, no other traffic. And I slammed I pulled over right there at the Hindu temple. Where that
turned off. The bullet went in the hood, passed through the front trunk and out the fender.
You can see it wouldn't take too much of a change in speed for that to have gone in elsewhere. You know, his height wasn't too far off, you know, if he was indeed aiming at me.
I test the hole with my pinky. It has a jagged edge. I can feel how close a call that was, how the bullet so easily could have hit him.
So I went through there. They've replaced this piece, I think, and came through here and then out the fender from about like here. And they said it might have bounced off the tire.
After work, Ian says, he stopped by Lost Hill Station. He remembers the deputy who took the report didn't appear too worried.
So she took a picture and she handed me a slip of paper with a number on it and said, this is your crime report if you ever need it. Okay, and they weren't concerned. There was nobody expressing any kind of serious interest in it.
For the next few days, he tells me, he felt strange and avoided Malibu Canyon. When he couldn't avoid the road, he ruminated. Where had that shot come from? Who had fired it? And why? Then, 4 days later, on June 22nd, Beaudet was killed.
I remember driving through Malibu Canyon and seeing a lot of cops and a fenced-off area, and, you know, something was going on. And I got to work, and I really don't recall when I learned, but I learned that somebody had been murdered in the campground. I thought, wow, that's bizarre.
Suddenly, he says, the cops were all over him.
My phone just lit up. And within, I bet in a half an hour, I probably got 20 calls from sheriffs, from LAPD, from Lost Hills, from rangers, from newspapers, from reporters. And I just thought, what is this?
They summoned him back to Lost Hills Station, where a group of deputies quickly ushered him around the side.
So I drove around the back, and there must have been 15 guys in uniform that came up, and there were a lot of guys that were just like volunteer kind of guys wearing deputy sheriff's stuff. There was a sergeant, I remember, and there was a detective, and they had a handful of dowels, and they of different diameter, and they put the dowels into the hole, and
that was Sergeant Tui Wright and his search and rescue team. Sergeant Wright saw this shooting as another one of the near misses and believed that whoever had done it had also likely killed Tristan Beaudet.
They were trying to figure out the trajectory of the bullet.
The trajectory was important. Investigating the BMW shooting, Sergeant Wright had found that hill, the suspected shooting mound, on the park side of the canyon road. He was wondering if whoever shot the Tesla had fired from the same elevated spot. And later, after the Woolsey fire had burned a bunch of brush away, he went back and searched there and found 9mm casings. But back in June 2018, Ian says, the deputies were being secretive.
By what I gathered, they didn't want to tell me anything. They were trying to usher me away from the car most of the time and have somebody else ask me questions while they were putting the dowels in and stuff. But I was
Ian says he did hear one thing loud and clear, and it confused him in the months ahead when he, like everyone else in Malibu, kept hearing the sheriff's department say there was no connection, no relation, no link among all these violent crimes. He overheard Sergeant Wright and the deputies say that he, Ian, was the eighth victim in an ongoing shooting spree that had just turned deadly.
I believe they said that I was number eight. And I thought, what's that mean? Why am I number eight? And then a little later, they said that, is it Tristan? Yeah, that he was number nine.
This was the thinking of a faction inside Lost Hill Station. They didn't yet know who the canyon shooter was, but they believed that he was out there. For a year and a half, they'd been telling the department, but the department wouldn't listen. The Tesla shooting had been the sheriff's department's last chance to intervene before the murder. And they missed. Captain Becerra is inviting me to come and see him at Lost Hill Station. Yes, of course I want to come. It'll be my first time behind the mirrored glass. He's a generous host. He takes me around to meet the detectives. He takes me outside to the parking lot so I can see the helipad. There's a pile of scat right on the seal. Mountain lion, maybe? I look around at the dry, empty hills. Over the ridge is that steep slope where Rauta made his camp. How did it take them so long to find him? Captain Becerra is babbling on about how cops hate journalists, how if I'm ever going to find out what I want to know about this investigation, I'm going to need to build some trust. He thinks I should meet as many deputies as possible. Go out with them. See Malibu through their eyes. He suggests I go on a ride along with the beach team. Okay. Rauta told me in a letter that he hasn't been to Malibu's beaches in years, since the mid-2000s, but it's worth a try. So I spend a morning weaving in and out of sunbathers on a quad.
There was an incident regarding paparazzis in Matthew McConaughey near Paradise Cove. And there was an incident where a paparazzi was assaulted and his property was vandalized. Thrown in the water, his camera.
And then we had some pirates, guys that were dressed in pirate outfits that were at Zuma 7 in the parking lot that were smoking marijuana in their car.
They said they were in a band, so they're dressed like pirates. They're smoking weed in their car. That was back when weed's, you're still not supposed to smoke in public, but it was more of a big deal back then. This job's fun because you just drive around and watch everything.
It's Becerra. He tells me he's arranged a day with Malibu Search and Rescue, Sergeant Tui Wright's old team. I head back to the station and climb into a Search and Rescue SUV. Search and Rescue played a pivotal role in the Rauta investigation. They found a lot of evidence and assisted in the capture operation. I've been trying to get on their radar for months.
So,
Nice right now.
What's that?
I said nice ringtone.
Well, that's the ringtone for the team.
We drive around for hours, looking at the beautiful ocean views. The guys tell me some stories.
A gentleman called the sheriff's station and thought there's a woman being attacked on a trail.
This is Mark Hollinger, a medical officer with Search and Rescue.
He was wondering if she was being beaten or raped. He was very concerned. We came out there, did a big search, found no evidence of anybody on the trail, any evidence of a woman that was attacked. One of our team members said, you know, I believe that when mountain lions are in heat, they put out a sound very similar to a woman screaming. So he went onto Google and was able to get the recording of this sound, which does sound like a woman screaming for help, actually saying the help, help, help type thing, very similar.
He's not wrong. This is a recording I found.
So we, as a follow-up, we went to the gentleman's house who reported it and played that tape for him and said, is this what you heard that night? And he goes, oh my God, that's the exact sound I heard. Did you find the woman? Is she okay? We said, actually, no, the sound you're hearing is a mountain lion in heat.
It's a good story, but they're not telling me the story. Did you get what you needed? Becerra asks. Totally, I lie. I've been at this for weeks, driving all over Malibu, wasting time, getting the runaround, looking out the passenger side window, watching the stone walls stream past. Then I get a number for a retired Lost Hills detective named J.T. Manuel, and he agrees to meet me at a park about 5 miles from the station. He knows all about Lieutenant Royal.
Yeah, he's very intelligent, extremely intelligent, mentally, and his never-give-up attitude, I mean, he's relentless.
He knows Sergeant Wright, too.
Well, Tui's a hunter, so he's a good tracker, and he worked narcotics forever. He's a very smart guy.
Detective Manuel is a big guy with blue eyes and a Steelers baseball cap. We sit down on a bench by the playground.
You know, Lost Hills is different that way, where you got to work a lot harder to find the bad guys because they're not all over the place, and the crime rates usually are not that high in this area. So you've got to just kind of be a hard worker to get things accomplished.
He was a detective at Lost Hills Station for 25 years. He reported directly to Lieutenant Royal. He heard about near misses 1 through 3, the early shootings in Malibu Creek State Park, from Lieutenant Royal.
Lieutenant Royal's a very hands-on supervisor, so he made sure we were briefed about it. Then
near misses 4 and 5 happened on the Canyon Road.
I think a lot of us believe there was a pattern after between 3 and 4, definitely by 5. Definitely we knew we had a shooter out there.
Lieutenant Royal and his detectives started chasing down everything, even though, as Sergeant Wright told me, his superiors in the department weren't giving him much support.
Lieutenant Royal was looking for a pattern and looking at people in the area, and we were all going off of leads or suspicions and everything else. He was starting to develop potential suspect names, potential people of interest who may have been somewhat radical behavior and all that. So we were definitely looking at different individuals who possibly could be in the area.
They were looking for someone. They just didn't know who.
It's very hard to find people in the hills. There's all kinds of people living in the hills that you don't know about, or that you stumble across, or you get a phone call on, and it truly is, if you're looking for one individual without a lot to go on, it can be like a needle in a haystack. We did not have a lot of leads.
I asked him if they were starting to develop a psychological profile.
Yeah, I just thought the person was definitely somebody disturbed who had some kind of anger towards the public at large.
Did you start to think at any point that maybe the anger was toward law enforcement?
Personally, that crossed my mind, yes. But I think more than anything, I thought this guy was just seriously out to hurt somebody. Lone wolf type of guy.
Did Rauta's name come up at that point?
I think with Rauta, I think that came up probably after they saw the tape with him burglarizing and a gun.
This conversation has definitely helped me understand how and when Anthony Rauta became a suspect. But I wonder if he can speak to the other thing that's puzzling me, the investigation into Sergeant Wright and Lieutenant Royal.
I don't think it was fair. I don't think it was right. And I don't think it was warranted. Two deputies, or two people from Lost Hills, which is commonly thought of as a slow station, went out and basically found a murderer and stayed persistent, collected some important evidence, and I don't know if personally that rubbed somebody the wrong way or they felt like it made him look bad, but I can't really give an answer to the motives of it, but it just, like I said, neither one of them deserved to be punished. They deserve to be rewarded. I know a lot of people were thinking that these two guys got screwed for working extremely hard. And like I said, it just did not make sense.
So according to Detective Manuel, it wasn't that they did something wrong. It was politics. But who did they piss off? Who is that powerful? I make a plan to visit Cece Woods. She knows a ton about the sheriff's department and is laser-focused on Lost Hills. All this stuff, the exile of Sergeant Wright and Lieutenant Royal, the investigations into their police work, it all happened under the leadership of her friend, Sheriff Alex Villanueva. Cece gives me directions to a $15 million Malibu beach house. It belongs to another friend of hers. I drive up to find her in the garage, doing her laundry.
Because it's 8 million degrees 2 miles up the canyon, and I didn't want you guys to melt. And I'm always here, actually. I literally come here, hang out with my girlfriend, I do my laundry in luxury, and I work. I swear I work.
We walk inside, and the ocean fills every window. There's a pool, a gym, a massive tank filled with rare jellyfish. We sit down in the private movie theater, and she launches right into a discussion of Sheriff Villanueva.
So my relationship with Alex, okay.
She's crazy about him. When his retriever died, she posted a picture of him, his wife Vivian, and the dog. "I love you," she wrote. She says there's a lot of speculation about her closeness to Sheriff Villanueva.
You know, it started professionally. When you're in a high-profile situation, which with me started with the Malibu Creek State Park shootings, and that just kind of put my name all over the world, and it still continues to. So when you form a relationship with somebody professionally during a very, during a very profound, life-changing time, so the people who are meant to stay in your life will stay. And the people who are not meant to stay in your life are not going to.
Whoa. This conversation is getting weirder by the minute.
I think they just look at me because I'm this cute little blonde thing. you know, this mouthy little big boob blonde thing. And they think that, like, that's enough that to sway the sheriff's, like, opinion, which is bullshit. And it's like, you know, I want to protect my ass, too, by not allowing people to think that I would ever use my sexuality to get somewhere, because I don't. I use facts. Facts, truth, data, whatever. So anytime...
Cece says Sheriff Villanueva is doing exactly what she wants. Cleaning house at Lost Hill Station.
Holy shit. Okay, good Lost Hills and bad Lost Hills. Let's go to the bad Lost Hills. Bad Lost Hills has been around for a very long time. That dark cloud just hung right over that station. You want to talk about continuing the rogue cop mentality? That's what was happening at that department.
In 2019, a captain she really disliked had taken over at Lost Hills.
At this point, I'm really fucking sick and tired of that asshole, okay? And everybody else who's a cock blocker over there.
She wanted Sheriff Villanueva to get rid of him. And she says she made it clear. She would send Villanueva pictures of the captain.
I would draw a red circle around his head. I would put a big X through it. I couldn't help myself. I'm like, I want that fucker gone. So
the guy she's talking about was captain at the time of the Kobe Bryant helicopter crash. So that wasn't good. And Cece was upset about a sexual assault investigation where the victim was a college student in Malibu. So she pushed to get the captain canned. And then for Chuck Becerra to get his job, which he did.
From what I heard, a rumor on the eighth floor is that when Alex did that, every captain in the department crossed their legs and protected their manhood.
Cece clearly finds this all exhilarating.
So now, as soon as that happened, like 2 months later, one of the deputies comes up to me. He's like, oh, hey, Cece, blah, blah, blah. You know, I just wanted you to know that, like, at least half the station is scared to death of you. I'm like, that means half the station's not doing their job. Okay. So you let them know, if I catch them, I will put them on blast. Okay. Whether it's an article or whatever it is, I'm going to make sure all the right people know. So they should be scared of a watchdog. They should be.
She says she's looking out for Sheriff Villanueva's best interests and going to war with his enemies.
He's not a fan of these people who are making the department look bad.
Who is she talking about?
I'm going to say Royal and Wright are not on his good boy list. You know what I mean?
I really don't. There are some 10,000 deputies in the L.A. Sheriff's Department. How would Alex Villanueva even be aware of two former Malibu cops? Detective Manuel said there were some politics. Did Sergeant Wright and Lieutenant Royal somehow piss off the sheriff? Or did they piss off Cece? Or are these things now one and the same?
But I'm no different than an activist who uses my platform to affect change. So that's what I do. And because Malibu is so well known, Alex knows that basically, if we fart over here, it's going to make global news, okay?
Speaking of which, she's got a new article in the works.
It's going to be a bombshell.
Cece checks the time. She's got to go.
I'm going to go see Vivian Villanueva. So there's like a dispatcher's lunch over at Duke's, so I'm going to go meet with those guys.
She's on her way to a lunch with Villanueva's wife, Vivian. At Duke's, that surfer-themed restaurant on PCH. So first the sheriff, and now his wife. I guess everyone loves the energy out in Malibu. Captain Becerra isn't done with me. He keeps calling, He wants to know how I'm getting on. He's chipper, as usual, but there's starting to be a frantic edge to his patter. You really need to find out the truth, he says. He tells me that Sergeant Wright and Lieutenant Royal are causing him trouble. Actually, he says, the Wright and Royal thing is like shit, and I can't keep it off my boots. He says he's stepping in it, tracking it all over his carpet. What? They botched the investigation, he tells me. They're giving the defense a defense, he says. They're helping Anthony Rauta. There's a pair of top secret reports detailing all the ways Sergeant Wright and Lieutenant Royal allegedly screwed up. The internal affairs reports about their police work. Captain Becerra says he's going to put them in an envelope, write my name on it. He's going to tape it to the bottom of his desk. And if he's killed in the line of duty, I should come to Lost Hills and claim it. It's Captain Becerra again. I'm driving on PCH, the ocean on my left, mountains on my right. He's going on and on about the screw-ups in the Rauta case. I know what he thinks of Wright and Royal, or as he calls them, Tweedledee and Tweedledum. But what about the other cops? Ty Berry, the major crimes lead, who showed up at Rauta's early hearings, and Daniel Morris, the homicide detective who witnessed Tristan Baudette's autopsy. The ones with records of misconduct, which I got from the DA's office. The dirty cops. I realize I've never asked him about those guys. Barry and Morris, he says brightly. I do know them. We were deputies together 20 years ago. We're like-minded, he says. We understand each other. All of a sudden, I feel kind of sick. Disoriented. I'm remembering this weird moment that happened when Becerra was first showing me around the station. He asked if I wanted to see the jail. I did, for sure. I knew Rauta had spent time there. So Becerra asked the jailer for the keys. He led me to a cell with a cot along one wall. I walked in, and as I was looking around, I heard the sound of clanking metal. He was closing the door. And then, still smiling, he locked me in. Lost Hills is written and hosted by me, Dana Goodyear. It's produced by Western Sound and Pushkin Industries. For more information about my investigation, follow at Lost Hills Pod on social media. Up next, Episode 7, Morning Light.